one of the moms, super nice lady. We're on the tour and she just fires up a stogie.
This motherfucker don't shower. Well, I do. I'm just not very good at it.
Well, I mean,
I don't fail that deal.
Well, I failed the written one.
That's what I'm saying. I might fail the written test, man. Frick.
I was going to say, you probably would pass the driving one, no problem.
Yeah.
I haven't been in Seattle for a long time.
Yeah.
But did you fail the written one originally when you...
No.
When you took it?
No.
You had no problems with that written test originally? No.
That was good the first time.
Dre, how
that
many...
was a long time ago.
Dre, how many times did it take you to pass your written test?
Oh, I definitely... More than like three or four times. the way they word the questions, though, in my defense, is they try to trick you.
I know.
So
they're like,
is that in Idaho?
Yeah.
Oh God. See,
they make it tricky. They're like, when you see a pedestrian crossing the road, should you A, stop and wait, B, go ahead and hit them, or C, call 911? It's real tricky. Dre has problems kind of answering those kind of trick questions.
Yeah, it's like you're wasting my time when you include options. Like, when you see a pedestrian, what do you do? Option A, go up to them and shake their hand. Go about your business. It's like, what are we doing?
That's how Trey's going to answer all those questions. It also took me five times, I think, to pass the written test as well.
You guys are making me nervous.
Well, we're not driving you anywhere, luckily. on the way up here... I drive an 07, just beat up Toyota Camry. Have been forever. Its name is Ass Kicker, you know, rightfully so. But we're going up the Lewiston Hill, and it was chugging along, no AC. And this car passes me, and Trey just goes, "Now there's a car that definitely has AC." Welcome, everybody, to episode number 21 of the Trey and Treeb Show. It's very exciting to have you on the podcast. I have some pretty niche questions about your football career that I'm excited to get into. I want to kind of lead things off and talk about your indoor football career.
Oh, gosh.
And talk
throwing it back.
Talking about arena football. And first of all, I want to say I went over to your YouTube channel. And
oh,
I checked
it out?
I checked out some of your highlights.
All right.
And I want to say you were the...
You did some homework, man.
I did. Yeah. I want to say you were the fastest pixel on the screen.
That's crazy. That was back when everything was still on, like, actual DVDs. Yeah. So converting DVD to YouTube was, like, a thing back then. But now it's so simple. You just do it with your phone.
So how difficult was that to make a highlight tape? Like the ones you have on there that you can really only see specks of people running around.
God, I don't know. It's tough. Like it was not as easy as it is today. You don't just have all the digital media stuff at your fingertips, man. Mm-hmm. You had to like go from, you know, one DVD and then burn it onto a computer program, and then you could get it into clips. It was a nightmare.
Yeah, it's true. Well, it reminds me. I think because you know I was a, you were you know trying to get on a. College football team and play professional ball during this time. This was around the time that me and Trey were downloading LimeWire songs on
CDs. Yeah, that's exactly right.
So I do remember that struggle. What was your favorite song to download on LimeWire? What kind of songs were you downloading over there?
Oh, gosh. I think T-Pain was real big back then.
Oh,
a
huge.
Bunch of T-Pain bangers back in that time period. I know, that was probably the one. You know, that was probably my most common download at that point in time.
How did you get into the indoor football league? How did that, how'd they find you? How'd you find it? How'd you get your foot in the door there?
You know, it was a kind of a crazy deal. My senior season of college, my team was really good. We won a national championship, but I unfortunately got hurt. I think the quarterfinals of the playoffs. And so I didn't actually get to play in any games. And I just didn't want my football playing career to be done.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't go out like that. You know, it was great to have a, you know, championship and your, you know, your team wins and you feel really a part of it. But you know, I just wanted to play. And, you know, I had a couple opportunities to go play over in Europe. But then there was a team out in Tri-Cities, that had some tryouts, had a couple of guys that hit me up about it. So I just kind of went to the workout. It was like a 3-day camp, did that for 3 days, ended up making it on the team. And I didn't even know what I was doing at the time, but I played four seasons, so I guess I did something right.
Well, that's would you consider that a long arena football?
It's pretty. It's a pretty long career in arena football. Even though I played with guys that probably played longer, I felt like 4 years was more than enough time.
Did you sign a contract with them, or how did that? How did the
yeah? So work? When you get in the training camp, everyone obviously just signed kind of waivers for you're on contract for those 3 days. But then once you actually get signed with the team, your rights get, you know, obviously your rights are to that particular team. There's a bunch of contracts and all that stuff. You don't get paid a ton of money, but you get paid a little bit, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, when you went to these tryouts, you know, how many of them were, you know, high caliber D3, right, or D2 for you, college?
I played D3, yeah, D3. Linfield, the D3 school, yeah.
Yeah, how many of them were high caliber D3, D2 guys, and how many of them
it was, it was like D1 guys.
D1
like
guys, too?
That was the thing that I was so shocked about. You know, you're playing D3 football, and then all of a sudden you're playing against guys from Florida State and freaking Michigan.
Wow.
Which was pretty incredible. And now, obviously, you still have plenty of small school guys as well, but you know, you play with and against a lot of guys from all kinds of levels.
Yeah, and when you, because you know, and it may be ignorant to think this, but when you go to like a Tri-Cities, is it Fever, right?
Yeah, it was the Fever.
Yeah,
you bet.
Yeah, Tri-Cities Fever tryout. Are there some guys that maybe are in their late 20s, you know, early 30s, like me and Trey, that are just like, maybe I'll get a spot on the Fever?
there was a couple guys.
Yeah.
Most of those guys pulled hamstrings during the testing portion.
So there were a couple guys like that?
There was a couple guys that came out. So the camp was 3 days, but they cut guys every day.
Oh, okay.
So that's that roster.
You had to come in and bring your playbook.
That's right. Like your roster looked a lot different day one than day two, and then day two to day three. And then after day three, you kind of had the training camp roster, and then it cut down, I think, to, I want to say it was like 26 or something like that was on a roster for game day, something like that.
26, yeah, because it was eight on the field?
Yeah, eight on the field. Yeah.
Eight on the field. That's awesome. You know, I'm a big fan of eight-man football, so that's cool.
And you guys played both ways except for the quarterback and
like,
there was one other guy.
Most guys played both ways, but in the league that I started out in, you didn't have to. There was some guys that specialized, but for the most part, like, for example, that's the reason why I made that team. I went there and I was playing like running back, because in this particular league, they actually ran the ball. But I didn't play running back, but maybe a couple of snaps that whole season. I played corner and I played receiver.
Yeah, I know. You had some nice catches in there, you know, and 360p you did.
I know. gosh.
And then I do want to ask, too, before I let Trey kind of take the wheel a little bit on the Arena League. See, Trey's a big Arena League nut. He does.
I love it.
He's a little bit of a historian. Were you in the Arena League video game? That was around.
No, I was not. I was not in that video game. I was not fortunate enough to make the cut.
That
video game.
But you were playing in that time, though, right?
Yeah, but in the league that I was playing, it was a different league than the actual AFL. So
you called it.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I guess my big question about, you know, the Arena League, because, you know, they have, like, the Arizona Rattlers, for example, right? I think they're, like, the longest, like, arena team that a lot of these teams, they come and go, like, 1 year if they're lucky.
Sure.
Or whatever, but the Rattlers have been in it for a while. But, so you're saying, like, the league that you're in, it was, like, one of the legit leagues? Because I know even, like, back in, like, the early 2000s, there was, like, a lot of, you know, like, sketchy startups.
Yeah, there was, like, there was basically three leagues then that were like legitimate. The AFL was the top league, and that's they actually got paid pretty good at that at that time. Then there was Arena Football 2, and then there was the NIFL, which is the league that Tri-Cities played in, and then it eventually went to Arena 2 after that. But those kind of three leagues were probably the biggest leagues that at that time, for sure.
Yeah. And when you look at, because obviously it's a lot different, it's a lot more high scoring, the field shorter.
Yeah.
You know, kind of basketball-ish with as far as how many points are scored. So do you think, even though, like, obviously the NFL guys are a lot higher skill-wise, do you think that some of them would have a hard time adjusting to the speed of arena football, or do you think they'd probably pick it up rather quickly?
Yeah, I think most guys do. I would say that probably the biggest difference is, you know, in the NFL, the guys just have more length, right?
The depth
of the length of players. But I thought – most guys could adapt pretty well because when you take the three players off the field, right, and then you adjust with the rules with guys being able to in full speed motion, I think guys get adjusted pretty easily. It's funny because it seemed weird at first, but then once you started playing, it was just football.
Just gridiron football.
You just throw it a lot more.
Was it difficult to kind of get used to the full speed motions?
Because on defense, oh my God, I'm coming from playing running back at the last 5 years of my life in college, and I got to go play corner, and this dude's running full speed. He runs 4.4, and he's running full speed now. That was tough, man. So that was probably the biggest adjustment. Well, that and the wall, because the wall is still wall is still undefeated. I'll tell you right now, wall is undefeated.
Talk to me about the wall a little bit.
I always, as an offensive, mainly an offensive guy, especially when I played for up in Alaska, the wall was like my friend. You know, I would like lure people in and go full speed because I was pretty good change of direction wise, and I'd cut off the wall and they'd go running into the wall. So I liked it, and I made a couple catches, you know, over the wall. That was the other thing I think was cool. It's like, you know, you still have a chance to make a play even though the ball's out of bounds. So I thought, yeah, the wall was kind of fun, to be honest, overall.
And Tri-Cities had a pretty good fan base for that, too.
Shoot, so did Alaska. When I went up to Alaska, they didn't have any professional sports outside of hockey. And so we were, like, kind of a big deal up there in Anchorage. But both towns that I played in, I was pretty fortunate to have, like, good crowds, because I also played in a lot of places that didn't have anybody.
Well, that was a cool thing with the we had the Spokane Shock growing up.
Shock was awesome. They had a big crowd.
Oh, awesome. It was the best. Birthday parties, you know, you name it, we'd go to a Shock game.
Yeah, for sure.
And then what kind of lifestyle was it like playing in the Arena League? What was your, like, paychecks like? Did you have to get a second job? How was that like?
Yeah, so, I mean, it just depended on how motivated you are. You know, you didn't get paid a lot. I think the base contract, my first year, I think you got paid, like, $250 a game, something like that. And then they had some, like, bonuses and stuff. So, like, you'd be fine because they fed you, they housed you, so you weren't worrying about those expenses. But I'm like a hustler, man. I couldn't just sit around making, like, $200 a week, man. And so I had a job when I was in Tri-City. Actually, I had really this similar job. When I was in Tri-Cities, I had an awesome job. I was running an athletic training facility.
Nice.
You know, my brother Tracy, that's actually how he first got sparked on this idea. He was actually playing here at Idaho. And he went, you know, most kids go to, like, wherever, Mazatlan or whatever for spring break, right? Yeah. You know, Tracy comes and works out with me for a week. But I had all this really cool equipment. I had, like, high-speed treadmill with an unweighted system that had, like, you had a vest and, like, took weight off you so you could run faster, do some overspeed training. I had, like, vibration platforms. And so I did kind of the, you know, performance training deal there in Tri-Cities for 2 years and did something similar when I was up in Alaska as well. So, like I said, man, I just wasn't one of those guys going to sit around the hotel all day. I wanted to actually go do some stuff and make a little bit more money for myself. So, but a lot of guys didn't, you know, a lot of guys just hang out.
Chill.
And that's probably what I would want to ask you, because from the way you're describing it, because I've heard, like, a lot of arena players, you know, they get into, like, these conflicts with, like, the leagues over not getting paid when they're supposed to be getting played. I've even heard some of them don't even provide health insurance for their own players.
Yeah, but that's crazy, yeah.
But from what you're saying, like, they took care of you for the most part.
Yeah, no, the two places I went, they were stand-up franchises. I mean, they, like I said, our housing was paid for. We had kind of trade-out deals with a ton of restaurants in both towns. And up in Alaska, it was really cool because, I mean, I don't know if I paid for a drink for 2 years.
That's how popular it was,
right? There wasn't anything else. And so they're like, oh, you play for the Wild, man. It's like, yeah, you bet I do. And so that was pretty fun. But, yeah, but, I mean, there are plenty of places. I'm telling you, there's a lot of places that were not that way. There was a team that we played that they weren't getting their checks, so they hadn't been paid for, like, 5 weeks. And these dudes had a mutiny right before our game in the playoffs, which was just wild. So there are some crazy stories in arena because you have different types of people, too. You had dudes like me that kind of knew, like, you know, I'm probably not going to make the league, so you know, I just want to play. And then you had dudes that, like, really thought they were going to make it to the league from there. And then you had dudes that played in the league. And were coming down and just still want, you know, keep playing and, you know, maybe keep their foot in the door. So you had this wide range of characters at every stop, for sure.
Did you get a pretty nice bonus when you won Offensive Player of the Year, was it?
Yeah, so that was the cool thing. You know, teams had your base salary, and then they could pay you whatever they wanted. So my last couple years up in Alaska, when I played up in Alaska, I actually got paid a little bit more than what most guys were getting paid. And so It was really, you know, wasn't going to get me rich, but I definitely wasn't going hungry either.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Who were some of the best players you either played with or played against?
Yeah, I was going to ask, did you ever run into Kurt Warner?
No, I'm not that old. Jeez, don't age me that much. Yeah. I played against some really good guys. The one guy that stands out to me, anytime anyone asks me, ever asks me, like, who's the best guy you played against in an arena? It was this guy named Jason Lee. He played for Corpus Christi. He played corner, and he was probably about 6'1"-ish, long arms. The only way I ever got open against this guy was when I was in motion. If I was on the ball, this guy just pressed the shit out of me and beat my ass. But what made him even worse is he didn't talk shit.
Yeah, he was just
there was no trash talk.
He was still,
The dude would just whoop me on a play, and I'd be like trying to get into it with him. He would just go about a business.
Yeah.
You know, it's another football play for Jason Lee.
That has to be the worst. It's the worst when they don't say anything and when they just say things that don't make any sense.
Sure, yeah.
So you were a trash talker in your day, huh?
Not a big-time trash talker, but that was part of the game.
Just part of the game,
If I'm having a good game or if I'm having a real bad game, I'm going to try to get something out of somebody.
See, I only played high school football, so I think the only trash talk I ever encountered were temper tantrums.
Yeah.
I'd only encountered kids saying, you're holding me! And then I'd be like, no, sure. I'm not. No, I'm not, dude.
I did want to ask, did you know of the because I know the KISS had an arena team, the LA KISS, and so did you know of them? And I think Bob McMillan, who's a Hall of Fame in the Arena League, and I was just curious if you knew anything
I didn't I don't know that name.
Yeah.
But I did try, so LA had the Avengers as well. I did try out for the Avengers one time, and I got called back for their camp roster, but then it's always a numbers game, right? So I didn't actually ever go to training camp. But I thought it was cool that I went to a workout and got called back.
That is cool.
That was really good.
It's cool. So you look back pretty fondly on your times in the Arena League then.
Absolutely. Like. Yeah. No, I met my wife up in Alaska, of all places. So I've got a lot of really fun memories playing back in the day, for sure.
Yeah, I was going to ask that as me, a recently engaged man. I was going to ask where you met your wife. So you
up in Anchorage, Alaska. Yeah, you bet.
Did she pay for one of your drinks, or how'd that go down?
No, she actually went. So she went up there and was working for State Farm right out of college, and you know she's getting paid a bunch of money, and she wasn't meeting any young people, right? And so she did cheer and dance in high school. And so they had like a, you know, they had a dance team or whatever. And so she joined the team, and we just ended up meeting at this like function. I don't even remember where it was at. Some restaurant function, and away we go.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Congratulations to you too.
Hey, thanks, man. How long have y'all been together again?
So we just celebrate our 15th year anniversary being married, but we've been together for 18 years.
18 years. Wow.
Yeah. Long time.
Legal. All right. Now the next one that I want to lean into is your time at Simon Fraser.
Yeah.
Simon Fraser seems like the indoor football equivalent of college football.
Very obscure.
How'd you find your way over there, and kind of talk about your time there a little bit?
Well, you know, I was at Stadium High School for 4 years as a head coach there, and it was great, and we really built that program, but I was getting this itch to go back to college, and honestly, I just saw they had posted their head coaching job on Football Scoop.
Yeah.
I sent my resume in, got a call back, went up there to Burnaby and went and interviewed, and they offered me the job. So it was purely a, hey, best guy for the job.
Yeah.
Right? Went through the process and ended up getting hired there in 2018.
Did you kind of know what you were getting yourself into as far as, like, how that program was? I mean, I don't really know a whole heck of a lot about Simon Fraser's background, but I know that they –
were terrible.
Don't win. I didn't want to say
it. Yeah, they were not very good.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I knew about the losing before I got there. They hadn't won a game in almost 4 years.
Yeah.
But I'm very optimistic about everything. Like, I'm like, well, listen, I went up there. I saw this college. It's in freaking Vancouver.
Yeah.
Right? Western Washington's miles away. Why can't they be good? And so even though I knew it was going to be very challenging, I knew that they did not have a recent tradition, because Simon Fraser has been good, but they didn't have a recent history of success. I just thought, why not me, right? And I think anytime you can make football important, make it exciting, create some buzz around your program, you can recruit. And we did that. Obviously, we didn't win a ton, But I didn't get named Coach of the Year in 2018 for winning. It was because we had got so much better. I mean, we took a program that was getting 80, 90 points scored on them, you know, the year previous. And, you know, we won a game and had a couple really close ones in that first season as well. So although I kind of knew what I was getting into, you don't know until you get there. And there was just some disadvantages that I didn't know were even a thing, right? Yeah. For example, in the U.S., when you think of college athletics, there's like a real strong emotional attachment to colleges because of athletics, whether you played or you just went to school there.
Even just watched it.
Or just watched it, right? Yeah. There's just a strong connection to universities. And so naturally, you know, people that have these strong connections, they give back, they come back. And it's just not the same culture in Canada.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the students at Simon Fraser are international students. So they get their degree and they go home.
Yeah.
You know, or they, you know, they go to university. So they, as they say up in Canada, and they move on.
Yeah.
And so there isn't as much of that emotional attachment. Now, I met some phenomenal people that are extremely emotionally attached to this day to the program, but it wasn't the norm.
Gotcha.
Right? It wasn't the culture there. And so that part of it was tough. But it was still a great time. I thought we had great experiences. We had some really good kids up there, a couple guys that, you know, got a chance to play professionally and are still playing professionally up in Canada, which was neat.
Yeah.
But, you know, you had guys that could go to the CFL.
That well, and that's kind of the thing, too. When, like, Simon Fraser guys, is that kind of their goal to go to the CFL? Do they want to go to a different college? Do they want to go to the NFL?
I think, you know, most guys there, they want to play in the NFL, obviously. Yeah, everyone will play the highest level. But understanding that they have Canadian citizenship and can be drafted, I think, was a huge deal, too, right?
That's knowing the pipeline.
Yeah, that they have a legitimate chance to play professional football. And at the time when I was playing there, or excuse me, coaching there, we had the most CFL draft picks ever.
That's cool.
From Simon Fraser. And it's sad that the program is no longer, but certainly cherish my time I did have up there.
Yeah. Were you the coach when the Idaho played them?
No. So I was the coach that scheduled the game, but unfortunately I left after the 2018 season. And so I didn't get a chance to actually play the game.
Yeah. Unfortunate. Yeah. Real unfortunate after the final result of that one.
Yeah. I think I missed a dodge the bullet there.
Really missed a hoot and a holler, dare I say. So what was it difficult? Recruiting's always going to be, you know, a mixed bag, but what was kind of recruiting like in Simon Fraser?
Well, recruiting was a little bit different just because I knew that we were not going to be, unless we got all the best kids in Canada, right, from all over the country, right, it's going to be really hard to compete with just Canadian kids.
Yeah.
Right, because there are some great players, but, I mean, Nova Scotia is pretty damn far from Vancouver, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even Quebec or Toronto is very far.
Very far.
That's like, you know, kids coming to Idaho from New York.
Exactly.
And so that distance was a challenge. So we knew we had to recruit American players. And the great thing is, obviously, I had a great pipeline in Western Washington. Just my ties there as a high school coach, playing high school football there. Obviously, my brother running a facility there. So we had a pipeline, so to speak. However, the finances were the tough part, right? It's not like I had all full scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't have financial aid up there in terms of, like, you know, Pell Grant, things like that. So if a kid needed Pell Grant, they couldn't get it. So that part was definitely challenging. But what wasn't challenging was trying to find, like, the fit, right? Because Simon Fraser, very high academic school.
Yeah.
So we had to recruit high academic kids anyway. Mm-hmm. A lot of it was like, hey, trying to find guys that were, like, really high-level D3 guys or getting recruited by other D3s and telling them, you're not going to pay as much to go here.
Yeah.
We did have the exchange rate working for us as well. So it was like, hey, you can get, like, a 25% discount.
Solid pitch.
We definitely did a good job getting some good players there. I mean, I got a 3-star tackle to go to school there at one point. And off the
Looney and Tooney pitch?
Something like that. I coached the guy in high school. And nice. He's a great, has a great family and a great kid coming out of high school as well. But, yeah, so, I mean, recruiting was definitely challenging. But you could recruit there because, I mean, you had a university that had 35,000 students.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just outside of Vancouver, and there's no lack of things to do in Vancouver. And so We definitely were looking for a specific kid, but once we got that kid to campus, they typically said yes.
So, yeah, this is definitely the question that I wanted to open up with. So one of the things that Jason Eck was known for when he was here is being very aggressive when it came to going for it on fourth down. So
sure.
I am very curious to know, what is your philosophy when it comes to, you know, when is it okay time to go for it and when isn't it?
Well, a lot of this is determined by our analytics book. But I think analytics to me is very useful. But I know that we'll be pretty aggressive most of the time, but I think that you still have to have a feel. You know, there's going to be some times where maybe the book says, hey, go for it, when I'm just going to kick a field goal.
Right? Yeah.
So I think I'll be aggressive. Coach Eck, definitely very aggressive.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll be that aggressive, but we definitely want to follow in the same footsteps in terms of, you know, getting after it and being really foot on the gas on offense.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess that's kind of my thing is, I don't really mind, like, what your philosophy is, if you're aggressive or not aggressive. I'm just saying there should be a rhyme or reason why you're going for it on fourth down. I mean the whole, like, oh, the computer says that on, you know, you have a 50% chance of making it. I don't necessarily agree with that. I just don't think you would ever see Bill Belichick, you know, referring to an analytics sheet to
I bet you he used that analytics sheet quite a bit. Now, he also used discretion.
Yeah.
And I think that's where, you know, some guys are just different. You know, some guys will say, hey, I'm going to live by the book, or they'll say, yes, I'm going to use it as a guide. And I think I'm probably more of a use it as a guide type of coach, for sure.
Yeah.
I liked it, Trey. Very good. What's the most ridiculous thing, like, a parent or, like, a family member has done during a recruiting trip? Has, like, a dad or an uncle ever put on their highlights while you were scouting your kid?
No, I don't think I've ever had that. I mean, I remember a time when I was at Southeastern Oklahoma. I don't know if this was too crazy, but one of the moms, super nice lady, we're on the tour and she just fires up a stogie. Right? And I'm like, this lady's for real smoking a cigar, like, on the tour?
Just on the tour, huh?
That was probably one of the most memorable things from a recruiting visit, for sure. But, you know, I think all families are special in their own right. So
I think the stogie move, you kind of got to appreciate.
I kind of did. Well, it was a big move.
That's probably, like, the family just celebrating that they made it, right?
That's what it seemed like to me. But that kid didn't end up going to Southeastern Oklahoma.
Well, still.
In fact, at the end, she said something about, we're not coming to this. What? I'm not even going to use the term.
This is exactly how I thought she'd sound, by the way.
Yeah, it was not good.
Yeah.
It was not good. She did not. I don't think she liked her time in Durant, Oklahoma, but
I think the stoke I can appreciate now. If it was like a Marb Light or like a Camel 100, I think that's where it would be a little bit more.
Sure.
Has anybody ever sent you any joke film or anything like that? And you're like, are you sending this to me as a joke, or are you sending me this because you actually want to come here?
Unfortunately, sometimes I'm not sure if it's a joke or not. I've like been sent some film that, if anybody watched this film, they would have not sent it to a Division I coach.
Okay. Right. Thank you. I like that answer.
Way. Yes.
You are pretty present on social media, though. Have you ever brought anybody to a school from film they sent you directly on Twitter?
I'm sure I have. Yeah, I'm sure I have. I can't think of anything specific, but I'm sure I have. I think it's one thing, you know, for kids to, like, tag a million coaches on their film all the time. I'm not really into that. It's like, well, you're tagging 90 coaches.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Like, what is your true interest in Idaho? But for the most part, you know, I think a lot of those relationships, you can find the guys at film and go, man, this guy's pretty good, right? And start that relationship through social media. So social media is definitely something we use a ton of, and we want to know about guys from. And so I think there's probably countless guys that we've seen on Twitter that we've actually recruited and gotten on scholarship. So, yeah.
Basically, the question is, who is the best guy coming out of high school you've seen on tape?
Oh, the best high school film I've seen, or guy that I've actually coached?
Let's go both, actually.
So I would say that I think the best high school film I've watched was a guy named Foster Sorrell. He was an offensive lineman from Graham Kapalison. He would have been probably in that, like, 2015-ish, something like that. He ended up going to Stanford, but his film was unbelievable. This dude was huge. He was athletic, and he's physical. I mean, he's literally everything you could ever want an offensive lineman, thinking of being a four-star kid. But his film definitely sticks out to me. Who else? Anthony Woods. His film was unbelievable. Oh, I couldn't believe God. He was available when I got here as an assistant coach.
That's the first time I ever talked to you was about Anthony Woods.
Oh, my
Woods.
God. His film was unbelievable.
And he was unbelievable at Idaho.
He had a great run at Idaho as well.
I love that team so much. Yeah. And I talk about it to anybody that'll listen because that was so much fun. It was my first year on the beat. Anthony Woods was a star.
He was a really good player.
He literally, that game against Washington State, the first week of the season, and he was the number one running back on the depth chart. Nobody knew who he was.
Yeah.
And then he just dominated the rest of the season.
Yeah, he made Power Five guys look like regular dudes.
He did. He did. He was a star. On that offensive lineman tape, what made him stand out? And generally, kind of, what's the ideal size for offensive lineman coming out of high school?
For tackles, we really want length. You guys that are above 6'4" or above. I think 6'4" is kind of the cutoff, really, especially a tackle. I really want 6'5" kids. But, more than anything, length. You want them to be able to have an opportunity to get bigger. Mm-hmm. We're not necessarily looking for a guy that's 300 pounds right now, because I think most guys that are 6'5", 300 pounds and are really athletic are probably going to get a lot of bigger offers.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the starting point, right, where we're looking for length and room for development. Can a guy bend? Is he physical? Those are type of the things that I know Coach Ensley really wants, and him and I see him exactly the same. We want big athletic dudes that are not afraid to put their face on someone.
Me and Trey are both 230, 6 feet, and we get winded walking up hills. Do you think we'd have a walk-on spot on the roster?
It doesn't look likely. You could come to the walk-on tryout, but that's probably where it's going to end.
Well, there is no roster caps, so, maybe me and Trey will. Well, that'd be a good video if we came on. You put us in pads. I played high school football. I was a rotational DN, Thomas Ford.
There you go.
On the Lewiston Bengals.
Yeah. There we go.
Do you know how prestigious that is?
That is. The Bengals were here for team camp.
I was going to ask you about that, too. Yeah. Are you guys doing anything for the big boys during team camp?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Thank God.
We do some fun stuff. Like with our team camp, it's a lot of work, right? You're doing position stuff. You're doing team stuff.
Yeah.
But then the last night they're there, we do like a 7-on-7 deal. But then the big guys do Vandal Ball, which is like basically ultimate frisbee with a football.
Oh, okay.
And they freaking love that.
So one thing I will suggest, just because I was here throughout from, I think, eighth grade to my senior year, I went to Vandal camp. And every year they didn't have anything for the linemen to do up until my senior year. And senior year they had a one-on-ones challenge.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I hurt my ankle, and I couldn't do the one-on-one challenge. And it was the first year they did it, and everybody loved it. And I would have loved to do it, but it was my senior year.
Yeah, we do a little bit of that during the team camp as well. We do some one-on-one stuff and get guys competing for sure.
It was a blast. It was a lot of fun. But going back to recruiting, Trey, I know you got some stuff up your sleeve.
Yeah, I was going to say, back to the offensive lineman point, it is interesting that you brought up length because, as a Patriots fan, for example, one of the things that a lot of people in the media were talking about with Will Campbell was his arm length and how that might be a potential flaw going into his game, and I'm happy that we drafted Will Campbell as a Patriots fan. So, and I'm just curious, like, when you say length, is that like all length, or do you think arm length also plays a factor at the tackle position?
Yeah, I mean, I think all length is your kind of the overall topic, right? You want length overall. Arm length certainly is very helpful, especially at tackle, just to create space and have a chance when these freaking 270-pound edge rushers coming off that edge. But arm length is not the end-all, be-all, right? At the end of the day, guys got to be able to play football.
Yeah.
Guy with long arms that can't play football is a guy that can't play football.
With long arms.
Right, with long arms, exactly. 100%.
Yeah.
100%. And so I think, guys like Will Campbell will be fine. I mean, he's a great football player. So I think he'll have a great career in the NFL.
Yeah, that sounds good coming from – and this is like, I guess since, and this is going to be my other question, and then I also want to go back to the recruiting, but since we're on the topic of the Patriots, I was just curious because there's a guy undrafted, Efton Chisholm from Eastern Washington. I was just wanted to know if you have any, you ever got a chance to see him.
Yeah, so Efton Chisholm is awesome. I actually have a really, really good relationship with Efton. When I was at Simon Fraser, we had our summer camp, our prospect camp, and Efton Chisholm came to our camp. I believe it was before his sophomore year. Nobody knew who he was. He just came to the camp, and he was killing our camp. And I remember telling him at the time I offered, I said, hey, Efton, listen, I don't offer you at Simon Fraser, but I'm going to have no chance to get you. Right? I think you're a really, really good player. And him and I, shoot, to this day still talk, right? I was very happy to see him make it to the NFL. He's a really hard worker, obviously a ultra-productive guy from our league and a very good human being. I think very highly of Efton for sure.
Another Eastern Washington guy, Kendrick Bourne.
Yeah, Kendrick Bourne. Yeah. My brother trained him to get ready for the combine and his pro days.
Another guy, Land Larrison. He's another guy that the Patriots signed. He's from UC Davis.
Trust me. I know that guy.
Yeah, they know. Yeah. They know Land Larrison.
I watched the game this year.
Yeah. And the year before that too.
Yes. You're exactly right.
Or was he in that year when
two years ago it was 2022 when he was here getting after it.
Yeah. That was a tough game.
Let's move on.
Next question.
And then my other question, going back to the whole recruiting thing, is I'm curious, like, how much of recruiting is scouting itself and then recruiting? Is it all kind of combined to one? Because you know, you can go anywhere and say, yeah, that girl's a 10, but you still have to get her number. That's where NIL comes in, right? I'm just kidding.
I mean, yeah, that a lot of places, that's actually true. But in terms of scouting, recruiting, I think it's one and the same for us at our level.
Right.
I think you've got to do a really good job evaluating, and I think that's one thing our staff does a tremendous – I know we do because other programs know. When we offer a guy, they typically offer him. Yeah, and I'm talking about like the schools above us. Yeah. I know a lot of people really respect what we do in terms of our evaluation process. And so that part is, I think, critical, right? You have to have good evaluators on your staff. You have to have guys that have different opinions on things so you can really find the best fit. And then the recruiting part, right? You've got to build relationships. You've got to be able to, like you said, not just find who the good players are. You got to get them here.
Yeah.
Right? At the end of the day, that's awesome. That guy's a great player. You offered him a scholarship. Is he going to come here? Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what our staff has done a great job of, especially this 2026 cycle. I mean, we have 13 commits right now. We had 14 official visits. So only one kid this year that is a 2026 that came on an official visit chose another school.
And how much of it is like, is there ever, because like you said, you know, you have different opinions, which is obviously important. Has there ever been a situation, I guess not even here, but just in general, where maybe it was you or someone else just stood on the table and said, I want this guy so bad, I know he's going to be good, and then you get him here and it's not what you think, and then you kind of have to eat that, you know, as someone that stood on you?
Fortunately, I have not stood on a table for a kid that's not worked out.
Yeah.
Nice. I've stood on a table for a couple guys that have, which that's why I think my – superpower is, right? I ain't gonna stand on the table unless I know.
Yeah.
And so I'm normally not the stand on the table type of dude unless I really know a guy is going to be a player. And you know, a couple guys definitely along the way I've stood on some tables for and have had some great success.
Can you give me an example of when you stood on a table
for a guy? Tony Harsty. He's a guy I stood on a table for. I'll stand on 10 tables for Tony Harsty. I think he's a phenomenal player, and I think he's gonna have an awesome career here with the Vandals, but he's a guy that really stood out. You know, some guys on the staff at the time were a little concerned that he might not be top end fast. And I'm like, okay, great. Nobody can tackle him. Nobody can cover him. Seems like a good receiver to me. So again, I definitely stood on a table along with Coach Linehan as well. Him and I both really love Tony, and it's working out so far pretty good for the Vandals, and he's had a great off season. So hopefully that continues.
I'd just get mad. I'd be like, top end fast, what does that even mean? Those are two completely different words, top and end. Those are two different sides. What are you talking about? But, Tony Harsty, that's a fun one because it should technically be his season this year because, I mean, Idaho every year kind of, or at least the last 2 years, kind of rotates through. Two receivers have really great seasons. I mean, you had Dwyer Hamper, Jackson Hatton.
Yeah.
It should be. So what, Harsty and who's on?
Got a lot of guys.
We'll
see. We'll see who those other two guys. But Emerson Cortez is a guy that played a lot last year. Yeah. You know, Michael Graves has played a lot in his career. I know he's been a little bit injury prone, but he's had a great offseason. And knock on wood, he's having the best summer he's had as a Vandal. So
explain top end speed to me, because isn't Harsty fast? Isn't that his thing?
he's not a guy that's going to go out and run 10.9. You know, and maybe he runs 4.7 in the 40, but he's probably going to run 3.9 in the pro agility.
So you think the combine is kind of a joke in a way?
No, not necessarily. Flash. No, yeah. No, because I think there you can still either confirm or deny a lot of things.
True.
With people's right. overall yeah. ability. Yeah. And when you're talking about the National Football League and paying dude mm-hmm. millions of bucks, you better be right.
Yeah. I just like the flat-out delivery of that. So you're saying yeah. the combine's a joke? Cancel the combine. Yeah. Thomas Ford said it on the Trantrieve show. I'm going to make an Instagram graphic. My last talking point here, Stadium High School. Idaho has to be, in your career as far as coaching, probably the best situation you've walked
into? No question. It's yeah. not even close.
Yeah.
I walked to the Stadium High School. They hadn't had a winning season since 1993.
Yeah, and Simon Fraser thought they were playing
yeah,
hockey.
Exactly, yeah. yeah. Simon Fraser didn't win a game in 3 years. Yeah. So almost four. So, yeah, by far. And, you know, that's something that I'm very excited about here. Mm-hmm. I feel like as a head coach, I've developed a process, and, you know, that process has got better when I was at Stadium, got, you know, better when I was at Simon Fraser. And now I've had, you know, whatever it has been, 5 or 6 years to really develop that process even further. And when the process is correct, once you have the players, you'll win games. We didn't have the players yeah. At Stadium my first year. And second year, we got better. But the third year, we had players. We had older players that had experience and could play. Mm-hmm. And we won, right, because the process was correct. And so I think when you look at Idaho, right, we weren't in a place where – we had no talent,
yeah,
right? No. And we were able to acquire more talent with some of the guys that did leave. But I think if the process is correct, I believe we have the right players, and we should have a chance to win some football games.
Talk to me about your Stinton Stadium a little bit.
Yeah.
Being 0-10 the year before, I believe.
No, it was my first year.
Oh, your first year?
Yeah, you went 0-10. Like we were 0-10.
Oh, okay.
I had a quarterback that threw it like a wet basketball. It was not good.
A wet basketball.
It was not good.
He had to go underneath it. Absolutely. Almost like a shot put.
Very shot put.
Oh, my goodness. So what enticed you to get that job? Was that your first head coaching job?
It was.
Or, yeah?
Yeah. Okay, so that was it. You know, at the time I was working at the University of Puget Sound. I was the defensive coordinator there, working with Jeff Thomas, who's still a great friend of mine today. But at that time, we weren't having a lot of success on the field. And I had just had my daughter. You know, mm-hmm. Division III recruiting's tough, and Puget Sound's a tougher because it's a great school, phenomenal facilities, beautiful place, but it costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so I was just at a time where I really, you know, wanted to be in a situation where I had a little bit more control of the schedule. I wanted to be able to be home a little bit more with my newborn daughter. And Stadium's, like, right down the road. So yeah. They had an opening, so I just drove down there, and I'm like, look at this place. I mean – if anyone on the show has never seen Stadium, look it up right now.
Here's a picture.
Pull
up a clip.
Exactly. It's incredible. I mean, it's got this huge bowl. It's right in front of Commencement Bay. You know, the high school looks like a freaking castle. Look, it's like Hogwarts, man. And I thought, I know they haven't had a lot of success, but why can't they?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, again, that's that cautious optimism that I have of seeing a place that has the bones, right? It has ways it can be successful. You're right there in the city. You know, you have a Tacoma school district that has not open enrollment at the time, but basically open enrollment if you started in ninth grade. And so I thought, we could get this thing going. Mm-hmm. You know, there'll be kids that would want to play here. And I found out the first year it wasn't going to be very easy.
Yeah.
Again, going 0-10. But again, over time, you know, we just continued to work, and those guys got after the weight room, really believed in each other. And a couple years later, we're making the playoffs for the first time in the school's history.
What's the difference in the coaching philosophy there in college?
The approach is just different, right? You're developing these young people that 1% of them have a chance to keep playing.
Yeah.
Right? After high school. But all of them are going to move into something hopefully productive. And so I think the impact that I was able to have with those young men there was huge. I shouldn't say just young men, because I did have a young lady that played for me for 3 years. Yeah, Ariana played for me for 3 years. She was awesome. She was freaking physical. She was awesome.
What'd she play?
She played like D-line.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she played a little D-line. You know, she didn't play a lot of varsity, but she wasn't bad at the freshman and JV level. So, but again, yeah, just I think just developing people as human beings. You know, you're doing that here at the college level too, but you're just having such a huge impact because, again, so many guys, that's the last time they're going to play football is once they hang them up for the Tigers. So
what are some things about high school coaching that you think may be better than college coaching?
I don't know that there's a lot that's better, right? Because in high school, it's like,
well,
you can't really, like in high school, right? You can't make anybody really do anything.
Yeah.
It's all, you can't really have mandatory workouts. I mean, they're what we call voluntary, right? They're voluntary, but if you want to play, they're mandatory.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, you know, everyone in college, you know, wants to be there, right? Where in high school, sometimes they might not want to be there. So I definitely don't miss that part. I didn't necessarily miss the parents.
I was going to ask that. That was my follow-up question.
That was probably one of my least favorite things, not in terms of the parents in general, but just when parents don't have the perspective necessarily that you would hope they would. They maybe see their son or daughter as a player that is a little bit better than they really are. You just don't have that here, obviously, at our level. And a lot more objective players here at our level as well.
Is there ever go on like a drive to practice and you turn on a radio show that was like, Coach Ford needs to get fired 0-10 on the season, or most of them believe you?
No, not that year. I think that group of families was actually pretty awesome because they knew what we had. And we probably overachieved at 0-10, believe it or not.
You're like, we averaged 14 points a game. What do you want?
No, we actually did. We could score. We just couldn't really stop anybody.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, that was a learning year for sure.
Awesome. Any of those kids end up playing college football for you guys?
I had a ton of guys at Stadium that went and played college football. I had a couple guys play Division I.
Or for you.
Yeah. I had an offensive lineman by the name of John Blasco, went and played at Colorado State. I had a receiver that actually went to Sac State, and then I had a lot of guys that went to smaller college. I actually had a quarterback that went to Drake. That was another FCS school. I had a corner that went to Portland State actually as well, and then probably another 12 or 13 guys that played at, you know, the Division II or Division III NAIA level. So, yeah.
Any of them on that 0-10 squad?
Yeah, cool. A bunch of those guys. So the tackle was a sophomore that year that we went 0-10, and then, you know, his senior year we went 6-4 and made the playoffs, and, you know, he went off to Colorado State. So, we probably had guys that probably could have played and just need to do a little bit better in the classroom too.
College Football 26, they just released one of the most popular modes is Dynasty mode. Yeah. You know, you take the role of a coach and then you do the recruiting.
That was my deal back in the day. When, before.
You can tell with how
good. Yeah, man, it was freaking awesome.
Now you're doing it like in real life, which is awesome. Yeah. So since you're kind of familiar with the road, what would you say, you know, archetype-wise for your coach? Would you say that you're more of like a CEO type kind of coach? Or are you more of like a Ben Johnson, X's and O's, savant type? Like, what would you say your archetype would be as a coach?
I don't know if savant is a word that I'd use with myself, but probably a pretty good balance of both. You know, on our staff, I really want our coordinators, both offense, defense, and including special teams, to have ownership of what they're doing, have the ideas on their own. But I'm always going to have a little hand in everything.
Yeah. Right?
Just things that I see that we could do better, differently, in a different way, just to make sure everybody's is on the same page, right? Because I think at the end of the day, I have a pretty good understanding of really all phases of the game, you know, having a chance to coach in all three phases. But having that stamp, the X's and O's, is really important. However, I know it's hard to call plays as a head coach. I did that at Stadium. I did that at Simon Fraser. And if I would have stayed at Simon Fraser for a third year, I was not going to do that. So I would say if I had to choose one, I'm probably more the CEO type, just because I do think there's so many things about being a head coach that have very little to do with X's and O's.
Oh, yeah. Right? We see that in the NFL level too. Yeah. You know, Ben Johnson, we'll see how he's going to do in Chicago, but under Dan Campbell, he was the mastermind of that Detroit Lions offense. So it'll be interesting to see. I think Sean McVay, too, is a good one. That's good offensive line, and he was able to transfer to be a head coach. So, yeah, I definitely would agree with you. As a head coach, I think you have to be a little bit of both, like, on everything.
No doubt.
How was your recruiting change as a head coach from when you were a running backs coach? And how here at Idaho do you kind of divvy it up? Is it kind of like NCAA where each guy kind of has a location? Or how do you guys kind of split up the recruiting and, you know, that kind of responsibility?
Well, I'd say to answer your first question, I think it's the same philosophy in terms of relationship building, but now it matters more, right? Mm-hmm. So now when I talk to a kid, regardless of the position, it matters, right? Where if even if you're recruiting a kid in your area and you're the running backs coach, but he plays D end, doesn't matter as much, right? So I think that part of it has changed. But in terms of our philosophy, it's the funnel, right? We're going to have an area, and you're going to really – I tell our coaches all the time, you need to do a great job in your area. Let's find as many guys that are close to that line or above that line as possible, and we'll make decisions, right, from there. But then it kind of funnels, like I said, it goes from the area coach and to kind of the position coach. And then once those guys become like a big time recruit for us, like now all of our coaches are going to recruit that particular athlete. So I think our philosophy is really good. I think it's one that hopefully helps us not miss as many guys in the process. Cause I've been on staffs where it's like position recruiting.
Yeah.
Right. So, hey, you recruit your position. Hey, you're the head coach of your room. Recruit your position.
The whole world.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
And the whole world.
Yeah.
It's insane. You mentioned in when you met Efton at Simon Fraser, you said, you know, I want to offer you, but you're not going to be here. Has there been a lot of those guys in the past where you're like, I want to offer you, but you're going to be going somewhere bigger?
Oh, yeah. I could. I mean, like you said, it's easy to spot the tens.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've done a really good job in my career making sure guys know that. And then if that same guy wants to go somewhere else, they're going to remember that. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think that's why we've done a really good job in the portal, because, you know, we've recruited guys out of high school. We might have even been their first offer. They didn't choose us, but they remembered how we made them feel.
Yeah.
Right. We have a tight end that came here from Eastern Michigan, Gabe Hoffman, big time recruit for us, was the top tight end in our board. I believe he was the class of 23. And, you know, Gabe went to Eastern Michigan, and when he got in the portal, he called me and said, hey, coach, I just, you know, I think hopefully you're interested in a tight end. I kind of heard that you guys are looking for one. Is that true? And I said, Gabe, you know, I love you from I've loved you from the start, man.
Hell yeah, dude.
You know, and, you know, Gabe didn't need to take a visit here. He didn't visit any other schools. He was like, coach, I'm coming.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think that when you're able to identify really good players and you tell them, hey, you're a great player. I love you. I want to offer you here. I know I'm not going to get you. Mm-hmm. Well, if they have a chance to be gotten by you, they'll probably come.
How do you do that at a D3 level?
Yeah, it's pretty tough at the D3 level, but you can, right? I think you never know with some guys. And normally when it's at that level, it's like, okay, well, you see a guy that's probably not a D1 guy, but you probably can play Division 2, and then maybe that guy goes to that Division 2 and didn't play as much.
Gotcha.
And then all of a sudden he wants to come play for you at Linfield.
Yeah, I guess I didn't ask you anything about Linfield. Give me a quick rundown of your time at Linfield, playing Division III football and what that was like.
Yeah, I mean, we were really good. You know, at Linfield, during my playing career, we were 41-4. We won the national championship my senior year. I only had one regular season loss my whole career there.
Crazy.
We lost to Pacific Lutheran that was my redshirt freshman year in 2001. Yeah. And Pacific Lutheran has beaten Linfield a total of 0 times since then.
That's nuts.
Dude. Yeah, that was the last time that I think the Lutes beat the Cats, and so it's been a little bit since they've done that. But yeah, I mean, playing wise was awesome, coaching wise was awesome because of the culture, right? Mm-hmm. It's a culture that has done it not the same way, right? You got to evolve over time, but in a similar fashion for a long time. For anyone that doesn't know about Linfield football, they have the longest active and the longest streak period of any program in NCAA, NAIA, college football history. Their streak is currently at 68 consecutive winning seasons.
That's
yeah.
I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Yeah, so Linfield has an unbelievable history of winning, and I attribute a lot of how I look at football, how I treat football culture to Linfield, because anytime you're doing it for that long, you're doing something right.
So this season, if they have another winning season, it'll be
69.
Nice.
Absolutely. It'll be 69.
That's one hell of a number. Yeah, that's sure one hell of a graphic they will have. And they're the Cats, too.
Oh, the Wildcats. You bet. Yeah.
69 Wildcats. They got their graphics department has one hell of a job to do. And then was the was, Was the facilities kind of, how were the facilities over there? And like, did you guys just take buses everywhere? How did that work?
Yeah, they weren't great. when I was there, they have nicer stuff now. Now, my senior year was the first year they had field turf. And then we got like a, what is now a very small Jumbotron compared to what they Linfield has currently.
Yeah.
They've definitely upgraded their facilities from my time there. But we were pretty humble beginnings back in, you know, from 2000 to 2004.
Yeah.
Grass field, small locker room. You know, you don't get a lot of stuff. I remember you had to pay for your own travel polo, and you had to have a travel polo.
Oh, that's stupid.
Or you couldn't travel, so it was like, you have to buy this.
This is why college is a scam. You have to pay for your own books and your own travel polo.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But no, we although we didn't have like the greatest facilities or anything like that, the bonds that I've made at that place and just the memories you make a lot of memories when you win.
Yeah.
Right? And those memories will always live with you, and so. Even though we didn't have great facilities, we had a lot of other good things that I'll remember forever for sure.
And did you take a bus everywhere? Did you have a lot of 9-hour bus rides, or did you guys fly?
No, we were for the most part buses, because most of that league is in Oregon and the league is in Oregon, Washington. But you know, if we went to Spokane, we'd bus over, but we would stay the night in a hotel.
Oh, okay.
You know, so we were big time then, and the California trips, if we played anyone in California or obviously anywhere else, we played teams like Wisconsin and things like that. We charter flights and stuff like that. So we felt big time.
That's good there.
We felt
in your travel polo.
In our travel, but I did have to pay for my travel polo.
Yeah. Free charter flight though.
Absolutely.
Because I always want to ask that, because I don't know if you've ever heard of the Loggers in Lewiston.
No.
Yeah, it's like a club football team.
Oh, no, I haven't heard of that.
That
no.
Like they play like the students from like LCSC.
And oh, Walla, okay.
Walla.
Oh,
and they take like buses to like California.
Oh, yeah, no thanks.
And
no,
I'm just
that'd
like,
that'd be awful.
Yeah, no, that always sounds awful.
I did have one unbelievable bus trip in arena football from Tri-Cities to Rapid City, South Dakota.
Oh, that sounds rough too.
Yeah, so that was probably the longest bus ride I ever had, but Linfield's were pretty decent.
Yeah, I bet you the Tri-Cities one was fun, though, because you just had a bunch of grown men on the bus going to South Dakota. All right, Trey, any closing thoughts, statements?
I have to try it. You're probably not going to say it, but give me a record prediction for this year.
You know, I think record predictions are always tough because, you know, in my mind, we can go 12-0.
I think we
look at our schedule, and there's not a game on our schedule that I feel like we're just going to be out-talented, right? And so I feel very cautiously optimistic about this group. But until you start playing, it's tough to tell.
That's a press conference answer, right, Treeb?
I would say so.
I've had some media training.
I would say so, but he's given a lot of non-press conference answers during this podcast.
That's right.
So, you know, he's done a good job this episode.
Give you guys some good nuggets for this pod.
Good nuggets. Good answers. Thanks again, man, for stopping by and talking to us before you go on vacation. Really
thanks,
appreciate
man. I appreciate you guys having me. That was fun. That was a good time.
Yeah, awesome. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of the Trey and Treeb Show. Have a great rest of your day.